It's the all clipping version of the Sprocket podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Sprocket podcast. I'm Aaron Flores.
And I'm Guthrie, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective along the way.
It's covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, the lifestyle of touring and the touring lifestyle.
Shrinking the world by bike. Today in the studio, we have Tim Mooney of the Pedal Shift Project.
Interesting.
Oh, look. And I'm just kidding.
Did it quit?
No, it didn't.
My terrible Brock did his impression. Did it make it quit?
No, it didn't. Good. This time.
Oh, it will.
Yeah, earlier we've been having a little bit of technical difficulty with the GarageBand here, but hopefully I deleted some of the tracks that we don't even use, so hopefully that'll keep its like RAM usage a little bit lower, and that'll keep it from quitting.
Have you ever wondered how podcasts are made? Welcome to...
Yeah. Well, what? We spent like the first 15 minutes before the show just kind of talking shop about podcasts.
17-inch MacBooks true. And...
dipped in rubber tool rubber. I think I'm going to go one further, and I'm going to suggest you Rhino-line.
Oh, yeah.
There's like four people who listen to this show who did the same thing that all of us did. Right. That is amazing. For the rest of you, it was cool. Trust us.
If it makes it last another 4 years, I'll happily do so.
There you go. Also in the studio, we got Guthrie.
Hello.
And Aaron Delaney.
Hello.
Always good to have you guys with us. How's it been going? What you guys been up to?
Just been holding down the shop over at Cycle Portland for a busy summer season. Just got off of 4th of July weekend with lots of rentals, lots of tours, and ironically enough for Portland, lots of sunshine. So, pretty good one.
Yeah. Well, summers have always been kind of sunny for Portland.
Oh, for sure.
It's kind of how it's the secret of Portland, which now it's not so secret, I guess. But
it feels like Phoenix right now.
That's true.
Sweet it's, Jesus, it's hot.
This shouldn't be this hot. It should be this sunny, but it shouldn't be this hot.
And it's not dry.
Not quite. Yeah.
The lawns are crispy. The sky is sunny. It's Portland in the 2015 range.
There you go. It's a good case for global warming if someone believed in that anyway.
Yeah. I think Al Gore was right about global warming. It's very inconvenient.
It is inconvenient. Yeah. It is inconvenient. Although we don't want to be the people like the deniers that say, oh, it's snowing, therefore it doesn't exist.
Right.
So like, yeah, weather true. And climate are not the same. It's just effing hot right now. Yeah.
So Pedalpalooza is over, and I've been doing a bunch of
Afterpalooza. Okay. I've yet to go on one yet.
Yeah. I mean, there's a Thursday night ride. Hosted by Nathan Jones.
Nice.
Last episode.
Ride Your Bike. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's been really cool. And a bunch of random ones.
Yeah. Are these going all through July? This is new to me.
Yeah, it's after Palooza. It's a ride that should have been happening.
It's basically just the rest of the year.
I love it. Ride your damn bike.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I've been thinking of this patch. I don't know how I'm going to... execute it, but one of these days I'm going to have a patch that just says every bike, every street, every day. There, you've heard it. Now you can't steal it.
I was going to say copyright.
Copyright.
That's very similar to what Nathan's been saying lately.
Are you suggesting that Aaron just stole that?
Bikes on the street.
Every damn day.
Every damn day.
Yeah. There you go.
Going back to the tours, is 4th of July like your busiest time? Or
we've got two pretty busy days. 4th of July certainly qualifies as one of them. The other one would be during the Providence Bridge pedal that's coming up in early August. Pretty much year over year, those are the two busiest for us.
Oh, that reminds me. Yes, bridge pedal. Because my brother was in town that week.
Oh, nice.
And we tried to rent from you guys.
Oh, yeah?
And it was like we got there the day before bridge pedal.
Oh, yeah.
And whoever helped us was just like, yeah, they're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're like hanging out, and you could tell he was stressed out because there was like tons of people coming in and out, obviously probably getting their bike for sure. Bridge pedal. And he's like, hey, how can I help you? And we're like, yeah, we're here to rent a bike. Have you like reserved one yet? No. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's pretty much every rental shop day before Providence. It's busy for everybody. We this year got like a couple of days after Providence ended, we got a call from a person who is booking it for the next year. So we'll take them. I mean, there's a lot of people calling right about now to book it for that month. And so when people are like, yeah, should I make a reservation? I'm like, yep, that'd be a great idea.
You will book a year in advance.
Oh yeah. We've had year over year, there's usually at least 4 to 5 people who get done with it, call up the next day and are like, sweet, let's do it next year. So,
wow.
Especially with consistent event timelines like that, where it's always on the same day of the year, every year, basically.
Okay.
It does happen, but generally speaking, you're pretty safe up until about 2 weeks out, and then it just gets kind of crazy. So,
are they mostly people from here, or is it tourists?
I want to say it's a bit of both. What is most common is there's somebody who has a friend or a relative in town, and they're coming in, so it's like the quasi-tourist, somebody who has like a connection to Portland, and the Portlander is like, hey, check it out. If you want to choose like a weekend to visit Portland that's fun to bike on, this is one to do it on.
Okay.
I did it 15 years ago. It was the last summer I was here.
Oh, yeah.
And I suspect it's substantially bigger now, but it was amazing.
I don't know how many thousands. It's at least thousands upon thousands.
It's pretty rad. We should probably say as an out of towner now, we should probably say this is where you bike all of the bridges in Portland.
Right.
And it's,
and there's lots
including
of bridges.
Including one of the interstate bridges, which is kind of the jewel of the whole thing. Cause that is very much closed to bicycles during the rest of the year. And it's a pretty cool view.
Absolutely.
Did you get them all that year?
I did the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty rad.
I don't know if the Tillicum Crossing is online for the bridge pedal this year. I'd heard it was opening with Sunday Parkways, which is happening in September. I think next year bridge pedal's going to cover that.
They'd have to. Yeah.
I wish you could get patches for crossing every bridge.
Like each bridge you cross, you get a little like patch.
Yeah.
Or like a passport where you get stamps.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty rad.
We should have a patch that says every bridge, every bike, every day.
Yeah. When you cross,
just go for it.
Except for 405.
Just do it. Yeah. I like this. Yeah. Hashtag Afterpalooza.
Yeah.
Speaking of, what's your favorite Afterpalooza ride so far, Mr. Delaney?
The Thursday night ride.
Thursday night ride.
Yeah, really great group of people. Really decent ride. I mean, it's like really good for anyone who wants to get into a group ride. And also meeting all the people. So, really solid. I don't know. There's nothing to complain about, really. The cars hate us, but it's okay. I mean, it's becoming consistent enough that people who cross the Burnside Bridge in car are like, oh, it's those guys again. Honk, honk. Okay. Nice to see you guys again.
Nice honk. It's gone from like honk to honk honk.
Friendly honk. Yeah. Honk honk. I see you too. Yeah. Ding ding.
Today I'm giving you a foot and a half of space.
There you go.
Yesterday I only gave you one.
Happy Thursday.
Well, that makes me want to do more of the Thursday night rides now. Mm-hmm. The only time I was on one was accidentally running into it.
That was awesome.
It was pretty badass. Yeah. I felt like kind of like an achievement unlocked on my Portland, the video game.
I should give you a badge. I'm kidding. I
think we need to start doing this for real. You know, we're talking badges. This has got to happen.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to make like one generic badge where I can just fill in what the achievement was. And so then, whenever I decide to give someone or to give myself a badge. Like write in what it was.
Yeah, sort of like those hello my name is stickers. Right, yeah. Right. That'd be good. That'd work.
Hello, my achievement is ran into Thursday night ride accidentally.
Oh. Sorry, I can't read it. Just get really close. It's right there. Oh, speaking of lending people's bikes out, build a visitor bike.
Build a visitor bike. How is the visitor bike doing?
Oh, I'm riding it right now because my friend's dad is in town, but he's like 6-something. So you can't ride the visitor bike. I only made it for up to like 5'8".
I was going to say, your visitors must be below a certain height.
You have
like a reverse height limit.
Exactly. Yeah. So now he's riding the long haul trucker.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, okay. When he first saw you, he goes, oh, I thought it was going to be like a $20 bike. This is a really nice bike. And then she goes, yeah, just don't forget to like double lock it.
Right. Yeah,
seriously.
Yeah.
So that's
sure.
pretty cool. And I just saw him like ride past earlier off Division.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
On yes. Division.
Yeah, on Division. Yeah.
Yeah. When people from out of town are riding Division, that
they
like,
must have made a wrong turn. Is that what
exactly? Exactly.
Maybe. Maybe, but it does my heart good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love to see bikes on Division.
I like biking down it.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
It's much fun biking down.
He was actually riding on the sidewalk, so.
Are we talking from the tracks up to here or down from up above here?
Anywhere on Division.
All right. Well, then I did Division then there for a couple blocks at least. Yeah.
There you go.
All right.
Technically,
where's my sticky badge?
I'll get you one.
The Road Division like a badass.
Or get a badge that says it's legal. Trust me.
I like that one.
No harm, no foul.
It's illegal, trust me.
I can also see that going wrong.
Oh, I was just thinking for everybody, it's like, because there's the downtown safety corridor, and so, you know, 10 times a week people are going to be riding up the sidewalk or up the wrong side of the street trying to go to Pioneer Square. You know, you get a ticket for biking on the sidewalk. But on the east side, to the best of my knowledge, it's legal to ride on the sidewalk.
Yeah. Yeah, so long as you're not, like, you know, riding faster.
Yeah, exactly. You have to, like, audible warnings to pedestrian and same speed as roughly.
It's like D.C. and other cities where there's a zone where it's not legal, and that's the downtown core. Yeah.
Yep.
That's same in
D.C. It's not very big, though.
No, it's within, like, a 12-block by 12-block-ish space in downtown. I'd have to look it back up.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure myself.
I'm just like, you're outside of a bike shop. Nobody's really going to care. Just don't hit anybody.
Interesting.
Sorry. Interesting.
I cut into it. I was too hyped up.
None of us get enough bass in it, but it's we're working it. We're working it.
No one can.
Yeah.
Like, what is the opposite of helium? What is the thing that you can, like, you know, inhale into your vocal cords?
To funk.
Yeah. So Tim in from DC.
Hello.
Yeah, or I guess San Francisco.
DC, San Francisco. I just sort of been doing the big loop for.
But before that, you were in Paris riding around.
I was, yeah. A few weeks ago, my lovely girlfriend, runs a writing retreat every year in Paris. And so I was there helping her and did a bit on social media in the Tuileries. I'm sitting there, you know, with the group, and we're all talking social media and Twitter and stuff like that. And I'm sitting here, I take a half a moment, and I'm like, this is pretty awesome. I'm getting paid, we're doing something cool, and I'm working in Paris in the Tuileries doing this. It was kind of a cool moment, and I got to bike around a little bit. It was cool. It's a very interesting city.
Yeah, if you use the Brock voice, you have to have like all three syllables.
All syllables. And it's funny because I'm from Western New York and there's only two. It's interesting.
Interesting.
Or I guess that's three. It's interesting would be four with the
Yeah, my counting skills. That was great.
Math.
But yeah, so what was like writing? I'm always curious as like, because Europe or, you know, obviously like Amsterdam, Copenhagen are like held up as like the bikiest
totally.
Bike cities. But like Europe is generally also like held up as like any country in Europe is way better than America for biking, or at least legend goes. But yeah, so I'm always interested when people bike overseas, what their experiences are.
Yeah, and I don't have a ton of experience overseas biking, but Paris I've done a decent amount. And I rent the Vélib bike share bikes there when I'm in town. And they're these kind of badass, very curvy. They're champagne colored because of course, you know.
Nice.
And I'm doing all accents all the time here on the show. It's like,
this is the accent show.
Yeah, pretty soon I'm going to do my Bob Dole and my Ronald Reagan. It'll be awesome. Bob Dole. Anyway, so it's really a very, very cool city to bike in. But what is amazing to me is how much the traffic moves and the speed that it moves and how the bikes can just interact within that space. And it feels like that there's going to be an accident every 4.5 seconds. Everything feels narrower because the streets were made, you know, way back way in the day.
Yep.
And it just works. And I think that it's because, and this is my guess, I think we'd have to talk to people who actually live in Paris, but it's because I think that they're just used to seeing bikes and existing in the same space. And there's also a lot of motorbikes as well. So there's a lot of sort of vehicles that are less protected than automobiles
okay.
in those same spaces. Mm-hmm. And I think that works, but they all go at full speed, and it is yeah, it's kind of crazy. And there's traffic circles or roundabouts depending on what part of the country you're from, and they still all work. I mean, the bikes just enter them just the same as any car. Nobody gets hurt. Well, at least that I saw.
Yeah.
And it's kind of amazing. And it's something that I feel like that some of the cities in this country could aspire to as cars and people who drive cars are more used to seeing bicycles. I mean, Portland's certainly a city where people are getting more and more used to seeing bicycles. D.C. in the last 5 years, it's kind of amazing.
I was in D.C., end of May.
When I was in Paris, actually. Yeah,
exactly. And I was thrown for just how many bikes I saw just from the airport to where I was staying in American University. Just bikes everywhere, like sharing the road. And then there was a lot of separate infrastructure, too.
There is. In the last 5 years, it's been a really big part of the district's kind of transit modality is to increase bicycles. And what's been really great about it is it takes pressure off of the metro system, which if you've ever been to DC, I don't know if you guys have, but rail is like, everybody's like, oh, I love the metro. I love the metro. It's just overcrowded at this point. It was built back in the 70s, and they never thought that DC would grow to the point where it has. And of course, they keep adding lines, but it's too crowded. So what a lot of people have been doing is they've started to rely on bicycles more. And, you know, when I moved there, so I moved from Portland right as it was starting to get bikey to DC, which was the least bikey place in the world back in 2000, 2001. And in the interim 14 years, they've sort of moved together. You know, Portland sort of coasted a little bit, as you guys have talked on the show a little bit.
Yeah.
And DC has just accelerated. It's usually mentioned along with Portland and Minneapolis in the top three. Usually it's never lower than the top five. Yeah. It's kind of amazing. Yeah. And the bike share, the Capital Bike Share, is a part of it.
The bike share, I'm sure, has a lot to do with it. I've seen robust. So many of those, like, more so than just privately owned bikes.
It's great.
It's a good system. I'm not a member because I happen to own way too many bikes. But, you know, there have been a couple of instances where I've been around going, wow, this would have been a perfect time to use bike share. But, you know, I was like, okay, well, to do the day pass would be $8 and then I would just be lazy and cheap and walk. But, you know, the point is that it's a really good system and a lot of people use it because it's grown to a level of ubiquity where you're never very far from a station if you're in most parts of D.C., including areas of D.C. that have historically been ignored, you know, Southeast Anacostia, places like that. Now the district is starting to pay attention to a lot more places, and I think that it's really starting to help a lot. And it's not just in, you know, kind of white bread Northwest where stuff's happening. It's happening all over. And that's something that makes me really happy as a relatively long-term D.C. resident.
Yeah, that's one of the things when we had James Longhurst on, like that, one of the takeaways I took from that was, you know, he was saying, like, who are the people using bike shares? It's just people.
Yeah.
It's not like your bike commuter. It's not your typical, like, tourist. It's just across the board, everybody. Like,
and I think that's the biggest surprise.
One demographic that's doing it.
Yeah, that's the biggest surprise. I think that I would bet that if you would ask the Capital Bike Share folks what was going to happen is that, oh, the vast majority would be tourists who would take advantage of it and whatnot. Well, as it turns out, you know, everyday DC person as a commuting vehicle, as a, you know, go into a party kind of thing, as just moving around the district. And now it's on both sides of the river. So it's in Virginia as well. It's up in Prince George's County, Montgomery County as well. So it's moved. I would be hard pressed. I mean, I don't have data on the top of my head to prove it, but I think it's probably the most successful bike share out there. New York's mentioned a lot just because of the sheer numbers.
Sure.
Right.
But, and City Bike got some static early on, but it's really successful. I'm starting to see this being a successful model that's moving in other places. I know Portland's eventually going to get in, what, 2027, I think.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That far out.
It just keeps...
I just believe when I see it.
It's happening in California, too, actually.
Yeah.
A place where I used to live, Fullerton, California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have one over there, but there's... You rent the bike... And then you just put it back where you rent it.
Yeah, I was going to say, where are you going to go?
Where are you going to go?
Well, San Francisco's got them too, but they're all in the downtown sort of financial district area. Yeah. And sort of like, well, that's great and all, but, you know, that's built for tourists at this point because it's sort of like, oh, I'm going to go from Ghirardelli Square to Pier 39. Yep. You know, and that's great. But, you know, it's not, you know, for
that's
people
less of a bike share and more of a bike rental.
Yeah. And they already have that.
A lot of the bike tour rental companies I saw in San Francisco had sort of pre-routed rides. So you'd basically pay for the rental, ride over to the other side of the water and then take the ferry back in. So stuff like that was geared towards that, like, inclusive package. But having it be able to be where you can go from like one end of the city to the other, lock up at each end, is a great way to have it as well.
I think that's interesting or good for a tourist to have that opportunity.
But you want stuff for people who live there too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just the modalities and who are you trying to serve. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of sort of Capital Bike Share is that it's grown to a point where, you know, you don't have to buy a bike if you move to the district. And a lot of people, you know, come for 2-3 years. They come right out of college. They get their first job. And, you know, now they don't have to buy a bike. And they can really take advantage of the great infrastructure that
we
have now. I
imagine there's a number of people who, you know, either they're like some political intern or, you know,
Right.
Or just with the Capitol being there, like a lot of the staff of like, say, a senator or whatever, like they're there for as long as that senator is there. Mm-hmm. And then there could be a turnover. Yeah. So I would imagine there's a lot of turnover of residences.
There's a lot. And it's separate and apart also from folks who work on the Hill. I've seen most of the people that I know and have worked with are sort of in the industries that surround all of that, mostly nonprofits and advocacy groups. And for those folks, they come, they get their feet wet, they learn sort of their craft and their skill for a couple of years, and often will move on. And then there's the people like me who move there thinking, I'll be here a couple of years, and then it's like 15 years later, and you're just like, what happened? I left Portland for what?
It's interesting that you had brought up this statistic.
Interesting.
With,
hi, Brock.
With the statistic of D.C. becoming one of the more bike share cities, because recently Portland made it onto the list of top 10 worst cities for traffic, which is published.
Really?
Yeah.
I buy that.
Oh, snap.
I really buy that. If you're in a vehicle, this town can be pretty brutal at times. And I'm sure anybody who drives in this town with a car knows that, you know,
which is why there's just that low level of anger all the time. And then when they see a bicycle holding them up
that much more,
like,
just for that one minor second. Well, I'll tell you what, I rode here from Northeast Portland and I was going to use a transit plus my bike because I thought it was running late. It turned out it was way faster for me to just ride here.
It usually is. Yeah. Like anywhere in town,
you know, and it's funny. That's the, if you'll put the explicit tag, that's the mind fuck that is with this mode of transit for people who don't bicycle a lot, because they're so used to being in cars and knowing how long it takes based on the route that it takes. And when you bike, it's often a lot faster in dense urban areas. DC's proven that. Portland, I think, is learning that, or has learned it over time. That's how it is, man.
Portland has a map out, I think, that was put out by the city as well, which has speed of mode of transit per area from the center of the city. And so based on the overlay of that map, pretty much anywhere within 3 miles of the urban core, you're going to be the fastest mode of transportation is almost always bike.
And 3 miles, you know, most people who drive cars would be like, oh, well, that's, you know, that must be really close. It is enormously, that's a huge circle. I mean, that's
out to about
most
50th
of the,
or 60th on the east side. So
that's crazy. And that's where, you know, a lot of people live. That's where, you know, real density of people live. And that's been part of the old, when I worked at Metro way back in the day, that was the 2020 plan. I think, I'm sure it's something different now, but
I think we just pushed it out to 2030.
There you go. Shocking.
You know, 3 miles in downtown via car is going to take 20 minutes or more just because of traffic and parking.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
That's the thing really that people don't realize who drive a lot is how much time they spend finding
looking for a parking spot.
And, you know,
mother of God.
Oh, yeah. And in a city like Portland, you know, I'm going to be honest, this is an easy city to park in. It's really easy. Oh, my God. You compare it to a place like D.C. where, you know.
Oh, yeah. You pay for everything.
Oh, yeah. Or you're just circling and circling. I live in a section of town called DuPont Circle, and that is a very densely populated area, and it's also very popular. Mm. So I'm seeing a lot of people with Virginia and Maryland tags parking in my damn spots. So, you know, I mean, they're public spots and all, but, you know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, once my car finally goes, I'm I'm going car free because I don't use it enough to justify keeping it. You can do the math on all of this. I think you guys have talked about this on the show a million times.
Yeah,
Ellie Blue wrote about it in her book.
Yeah. Michael Anderson of Bike Portland has a lot of like, really good opinions, things to say about
private car ownership with car sharing. That's a modality that's going away.
Just the state of parking, or on street parking, especially here in the city.
When I talk to friends who do drive around town, and I do drive a little bit. My girlfriend and I have a car. For full disclosure, I think I mentioned it last time on the show. But I'm always like, I would happily pay 2 to 3 to 4 times as much for parking because A, that's going to encourage me to take my bike, and B, that's going to encourage everybody else to look in the garage and try to get that bike back out of it.
Right.
People complain about parking in town and I'm like, are you joking me? $1.60 for an hour or 90 minutes? That's outrageous. Like I want to pay at least $5 for that hour, please.
When I was living in Portland, it was even cheaper than that to be downtown. I think it was $1 an hour back.
Yeah.
In the Stone Ages, back in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. The dream of the 90s was alive when I lived in Portland. Let me just put it that way.
It was the 90s, wasn't it?
It was actually technically the 90s. Yeah. And during the winters, we would drive in. My girlfriend at the time and I, we would drive into town and park. Yeah. And it would just be fiscal reason not to.
There's no disincentive.
No financial disincentive at all. And then during the summers, I would bike in or take the bus, worst case scenario.
I think the biggest thing with both the hourage that you're allowed on the TriMet services and then also increase in parking, if there were any increase, it would be an excellent idea to include provisions for low-income persons so that there was a way, you know, if that's what you have as a mode of transit, there would be, a program or something, or maybe a sticker display similar to the handicap. Although you wouldn't want to just be like, I'm a low-income person. Like, I'm parking in this parking spot. Precisely. Yeah. So maybe take that back. That's a horrible idea.
We're just throwing things against the wall here at the Sprocket Podcast.
Exactly.
There are no bad ideas during brainstorming time.
As always, accommodate for persons who are in financial straits that don't allow them to have the options that many of us are able to afford. But other than that, I think parking should be way more expensive in Portland.
Some hotels actually, by the way, provide bike rentals too.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I've seen them around, which is funny too, because you mentioned earlier, I see some of these people, they park in my spot. And sometimes I see those rental bikes. I'm like, why are they parking there? That's my spot.
Yeah, but you just have to remember, I've got a Surly and they have a single speed Huffy.
That's true.
Eat my dust, Huffy.
Yeah. Eat my 40-pound dust.
Yeah. I think it's great that hotels are doing it. Just as a shop, we're a fan of bike share. We're a fan of like more butts on bikes to steal blatantly from QBP's motto. it's great. The bikes that they do rent, for the most part, I'd say are okay. There are a couple hotels who actually do have really great bike rentals. And the others, I think like maybe 50% are like, we have bikes. They do spin on the wheels, but you might not necessarily want to go up to Mount Tabor on that thing.
Like the office building that says they have bike parking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nobody who actually rides a bike helped install the parking.
Yeah.
And it's terrible.
Yeah. Like I'd lock my bike to it, but I can't fit it in between the two doors.
Right. In the meantime, you're like, well, you tried.
I've got that problem. So I run a yoga studio in D.C., and I've been very big on making sure that we had bike parking. When we built out the studio on the D.C. side of the river, we had the guy who built it out. Guy, not a biker. And he got, you know, those sort of wheel taco style ones, old school ones.
Yeah.
And so we've had that forever.
They're still around. We'll see it around here in town.
I'm embarrassed to say that we've kept it just because I just haven't had time or the inclination. It's more than nothing. And it's better because, you know, it also is very visible. I mean, it's huge. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really accommodate a ton of bikes, but I figured out a way that we can disassemble it so that it's at least two staples as opposed to this long, nasty thing. So we're making that happen in the next couple of weeks. And we also, at our Virginia studio, we're doing a car-free. We give you some bonus points in our sort of frequent flyer system that we have.
Yeah.
If you don't drive to the studio, we have a very small parking lot because it's Virginia, because that's how they roll. but we're trying to do things to incentivize bicycling because it's just something that matters to me, and I'm running the studio, so I'll, I sort of enforce my will upon things. So, but it's cool because it does make a difference, and we're starting to see bicycling as a mode of transit expand out from just the DC core out to Arlington and some other places like that. So it's cool.
We should get a badge that says I tried and just give it out to the businesses that have like the taco stands.
Yeah. I'm going
to
be walking out of here with a lot of my name is or my badge is.
There's an incredible naming opportunity over here for this exact thing. Like, you know, ride your bike, right, to work, or, you know, work your ass off before you work your ass off.
I like
for
that.
Your yoga studio.
Yeah. For your yoga studio.
And brainstorming, there are no bad ideas, and that is an excellent idea. No, I mean, that was a real idea. Yeah. I like that.
Let's talk a little bit about, like, about pedal shift, about touring lifestyle.
That's a great podcast. I've heard of it.
Because, so last year we did this whole, like, crossover episode, which was really fun.
That's right. Yeah, the badge is up above your head there. I sent a little swag thing because Brock and Aaron appeared on episodes 2 and 4, respectively.
Awesome.
Yeah, those were fun episodes. It was a great way. I'd really appreciate you guys help kick off the show.
Cool. Yeah. You're going strong now.
I started the beginning of the year to going to every other week.
Okay.
And this
next week. Do you think that's helped you at all? Or?
I love the rhythm of it.
Okay.
Also, I saw a real increase in traffic since then. I think that once I got to the point where it wasn't just I was releasing a show when I had the stuff, it was now everybody knows every other Thursday at 7 a.m. Eastern time, a show is coming out.
Okay.
Whether it sucks or not is, you know, in the ear of the beholder, but, you know, it's every other Thursday. And that rhythm, I think, has been important.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, in podcasting, well, like, with brainstorming, no bad ideas.
There are no bad ideas.
So you were just holding it out. Sorry. Holding on to, like, each episode as you got, like... Sorry, I don't know, something in my throat there. You got enough material, and then you released it. But having more regular has seemed to attract more people?
Yeah, I mean, the way I did it before was I felt, okay, I need to have the same exact kind of stuff in there. So I always had a thing I was talking about, gear, or I would have a story or something, and I waited until I had all of those things together. So every show was about the same length, and, you know, I thought the consistency of that was important. And then later I got to the point where I really thought that just especially as we were turning the corner outside of winter and getting into the part where people are starting to be like, I'm really excited to get out bike touring, especially for those of us who live in the climates where winter is sort of the off season.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a lot of listeners who have no off season because they're lucky enough to live in places, you know, the Bay Area or elsewhere.
Or burly enough to bike anyway.
Or they're burly enough to bike no matter what, exactly. Or they're off, you know, there are some people that are on, you know, kind of permatours, you know, the sort of...
Hobo cycling.
Yeah, it's a fine line between homeless and bike touring, you know. It really is. By choice, man, by choice. Say anything, 1989. Everybody remembers what scene, right? The gas and stuff?
Yeah, totally. That was, you know, just the year I was born.
It was the year I graduated from high school. Hi. Anyways, but yeah, it's been fun. And the other thing is, I mean, many of the people who are listening to this particular podcast now listen to my show and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I feel like that what's happened is this great ratcheting. It's sort of like people will stumble upon my show and then I'll be like, guys, gals, listen to the Sprocket podcast, do it. And I think that it's been vice versa for sure.
Oh, definitely.
So we're like cousins. We're like, you know, bi-coastal cousins or something.
I would say like, you, us, Pedal Hub
for sure.
In Minnesota.
Hi, Minnesota.
Yeah. Like all of those.
By the way, just for the record, Pedal Shift and Pedal Hub, I just want to say Pedal Shift. The name of it did come out first. I've been resisting saying it, but it's true.
Guys have been doing battle about this?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know what's been cool is there's been no static whatsoever from either side.
Yeah.
And I think they do an amazing freaking show. They just really do. And we're just very different shows. I mean, they're very much sort of like bicycling in general, especially focused in the Twin Cities and Minnesota generally. And what a great show. And it's just nice, I have to be honest, to be named amongst your show and amongst Pedal Hub. It just makes me feel like, you know, I'm the pretender here. I'm brand new comparatively.
Also, to be fair, there's only so many bike related things you can name something and not have overlapping.
I've
definitely run into that trouble before.
I could show you the sheet of paper with all the names when I was trying to come up with the name of my, it's like the bike touring show.
Yep.
No, lame, you know.
But it rates great on Google search results.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I see a naming opportunity here. My show is going to be called Pedal Pedal.
Damn it, he got the double pedal.
And so every June 25th, I'll be showing up in Silverton being like, wait, this isn't the podcast.
Aaron Delaney's podcast.
There's and then somebody will come out with pedal, pedal, pedal.
Yeah, for those who don't know, there's a pedal in Silverton.
Pedal.
Let's try this again. Pedal, pedal. So you bike to like different like flower beds?
I think that's the gist of it. This year, it unfortunately fell on the same night as the World Naked Bike Ride, so they had a bit of trouble getting the cross split for the different modes of people who would go to one or the other.
A lot of naked people showed up.
The petals were elsewhere. They were on people's bodies.
There you go. No, I actually heard they had a really good turnout this year.
Okay. It was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did it.
Nice.
Wait, no, you did it.
Yes, I did.
Wait, which one?
The naked one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's like you just heard of this ride. There's no way.
I was there and I invented it.
No, it's a cool ride.
So you've done it.
I've read up a lot about it. We had a lot of folks rent for us to go down to do it. So that's most of how it was on my radar for this year.
I like the town of Silverton.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's just got a real cool feel. And, all right, I might be wrong at this, but I do believe they're the first city to have a transgendered mayor.
Really?
That sounds familiar.
Oh, that does sound familiar. That's great. Yeah. I've heard this news before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. There's something in that.
Okay.
If only someone had an iPhone, it could look this up.
What?
No.
Oh, wait. Somebody's got it. If only someone had a 17-inch laptop.
All right.
But, I don't know. Yeah, it's been a staging ground for a number of tours south for me as well. That's the one city we'll stop at and, like, supply that and Canby.
Ooh, Canby. I like Canby.
The two towns.
Yeah. I also like Butte. Bootville.
I have no idea what you're Bootville? Talking about.
Real-time follow-up.
So,
did you find it?
You are correct.
Yes. Oh.
The first transgender mayor in U.S. history.
Woo! I mean.
Thank you, Google.
Right?
Yeah.
Thank you, Silverton.
Thank you, Google, for reminding us this.
Given like my prejudice of small towns and rural towns at that, it was really cool to see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Aaron, do you have tours coming up?
Not specifically.
But you had talked about you were
sometime in August, once the Pugs is all built up and everything.
Yeah.
Our hope is maybe going out to the coast and like doing some kind of mixed terrain touring.
Was it Pathless Pedal that just put something out about
that? Yes,
that was pretty
it was
great.
A good write-up.
It was awesome to read, yet disappointing. The answer was disappointing that you couldn't do a contiguous fat bike ride down the coast on the sand, basically, because there's too many outcrops.
Oh, it's hard.
What?
Yeah.
Just ride a Rockaway Beach and just get on the beach. Boom.
I'll take their word for it because they said that it was not possible in a few spots.
Yeah.
But I'll bet you could come pretty close. You know, it's basically sort of like portaging your boat, you know, around something. You know,
there's definitely, and this is just from memory of the coast, but like right around down near Cape Perpetua would be intrinsically difficult to do. And or so dangerous that you probably wouldn't want to.
Pacific City, maybe, with that enormous dune, unless you're really badass.
Oh, no, you can go around the back end up and over the top.
You can go over that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not sure how it connects from Cape Lookout just to the north of it, but definitely possible. I really like the write-up. Back in the day, so when there was like the coastal highway, the sections of it that they didn't want to do plank roads for, they'd do on the beach. And so before the Highway 101 was put in, it was sort of this on again, off again for taking it down. And when the tide was too high or too low, you actually couldn't do certain sections of it. So in a way, it's, I guess, a throwback to maybe like 1910 or 1920 or so that section of it.
Oregon Trail stuff?
No, just coastal highway connecting communities down through the Oregon coast. Just the history of like putting that highway in alongside. And I know much less about it now than I did about 4 years ago when I was looking into these things. But it's kind of a cool past and cool history. And a lot of the state parks on the coast that are named after these figures, if you look into them, there's a lot of really cool coast history out there as well.
I love doing the coast. I've done it. This is the first year I haven't done the Oregon coast in like 3 or 4 straight years.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And, you know, it's such an amazing ride. Mm-hmm. There's great resources for you the whole way down. Mm-hmm. It's one of the real jewels of American bike touring. I think
really?
it's fantastic. Okay. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just great.
I liked your raccoon post, critter protection.
Yes, yes, thank you.
Oh, I did not see this.
Yeah, well, that was in California, but yeah. I mean, the same rules are...
Just north of the bay?
Yeah, just south. It was in Half Moon Bay.
Oh, yeah, I
can I've camped there.
You've camped there. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, and for the listeners who did not read that post, the problem that happened is that there was a brand new group that was out there, and when I say brand new, they had never done any bike touring or, worse, any camping before.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah, and if you've done any kind of camping, you know that, generally speaking, raccoons in particular, depends on where you are in the world, but raccoons are pretty ubiquitous in North America.
There's critters all over.
Yeah.
And they're attracted to campgrounds.
It's possums, yeah, or it's rats, or like chipmunks, or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
and
there's always going to be something that's going to want to get
exactly
into your food.
And if you're a Disney princess, they're everywhere.
And they're very helpful.
They are.
They'll help you get dressed.
Let's just hope they don't start singing.
Yeah, exactly. It will sing. Yeah.
But okay, so what was it about?
Oh, so yeah, the group that was there, they had no camping experience, so they just left their food out on the picnic table over.
Oh,
yeah,
goodness.
I know, seriously, right? And so I'm trying to get some sleep, and I'd ridden from San Francisco, which did you go from the city? No, you do. You went.
No,
you started.
We trained into San Francisco, and then from San Francisco to Half Moon.
Oh well, yeah.
So you
yeah.
did
yeah.
ride it.
It's
going
yeah.
up and over Daly City.
Yep.
And
yeah.
It's,
yep.
Did you do the whatever it's called, the Devil
Slide? Yeah.
Yeah. Slide.
That is not an insignificant day. It's a short day because I think mileage wise it's less than 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's around 30.
But
I think.
Going up and over the hill around Daly City and that I mean that is some real deal stuff. And generally, if it's not foggy, you're really exposed, direct sun and everything. So I was pretty bushed.
Well, there's like no shoulder. And,
none.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as bad.
Road.
I you know it's funny because last year I did it, and that was the first time I rode it, and it was after you guys did it, and I was sort of getting geared up for it. And you know, there are other parts of the coast that is real similar to that, so it didn't bother me as much. I was all steeled up for it, but so that night I'm all, you know, okay, gotta go to sleep, I got a big day tomorrow, I'm exhausted. And then all of a sudden I hear just what just happened.
The trash is being taken out.
Yeah, it's
and the trash cans are like right outside our window.
Oh, another one.
I hope people can hear this because it's so the lids are being slammed up against the window of the studio here. It's
what's great is like there's this accompanying silhouette.
Yeah.
The window. I think they're grabbing the cans.
Well, they're doing.
No.
Are they putting things in?
I know the guy. He's like one of the guys who works here. He's
okay.
They're just. Getting,
they just want to get in on this sweet, sweet podcast action. That's what they want. It's
hashtag like,
PRC. Well, one of our dreams is to have a crowd outside our window, you know, holding signs.
Oh, that's got to happen.
Which nobody can see. Right. You can just read it out, yeah.
Yeah, and just be like, Sprocket for the win. Okay, so I'm hearing back to our story. So I'd hear, you know, the crinkling of like a potato chip bag, you know, that and I'm just hearing that. I'm like, wow, somebody's really hungry. Because if anybody's ever done bike touring before, and especially, you know, after sunset, sometimes you'll get the person who did 120 miles come in.
They just roll in and they
mow down and whatever.
Just,
yeah. And so I'm just going, wow, somebody's really hungry. And then it kept going and kept going. For like about 20 minutes, I'm like, okay, someone's really hungry. And then all of a sudden I hear a woman who I'd met earlier, who was with another group, go, whoever left out the food, the raccoons are out right now. And then you hear all this scrambling and everything. And I'm just sort of like, I just roll over. I'm like, oh, that's what that was. So, yeah, I mean, critter protection while touring is a very important thing because it's not only is it going to ruin your stuff because they can really ruin your gear, but man, you just it just ruins everybody else because the next morning just
it's a cycle
everywhere.
Oh yeah, and then they come back the next day and the next day.
Yeah, so. And it's going to make the campsite not so good. But that reminds me of the story you talked about, the Oregon Outback thing that happened. Did you hear about this?
Oh yeah,
I've been reluctant to start talking about it.
Unlike my rant on the last episode of Pedal Shift, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the, I didn't get all the way through that rant yet, but I'm not disagreeing.
Discussion.
Yeah.
Discuss.
No, I've been purposefully not bringing that up yet because I want to get the audio from Eric Iverson and his crew who were out there with one of our recorders talking to people and, you know, just seeing what's up.
I'd love to know
more. I've been reading a lot about it. And I've got some pretty strong feelings as well. And I feel a mixture of sadness and anger, due to the fact that, like, it's something that I've been wanting to do in future years. It's been a goal of mine, like, ever since I heard it. And so that's being taken away from me, so to speak. I mean, nothing's really going to stop me from
The roots there.
Doing
it's just,
the roots,
yeah.
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 But like all of this fallout and like what that says or how that reflects on people who are biking like with supported gear or like with their own stuff. I don't know. Like I fear some kind of fallout of like, you know, if I'm out there in the town I go to and somebody just kind of like projecting all of that. Oh, yeah. So you're with that group who like shat in somebody's yard.
Isn't that amazing?
It was it's in front of a barn, basically.
And somebody who said, yes, please, it's raining. Please stay in my barn so you don't get wet.
You know,
amazing.
The fact is, there was shit in a yard. I hope that there's more to the story than just that. And maybe, just maybe, I doubt this, but I hope that maybe there was like, maybe this person had an emergency and also was ignorant about like, oh, I should probably take care of this. Seems kind of far-fetched.
That's the thing. At a campsite, you know, maybe I can buy that to a small degree, but that also means that somebody's not experienced with camping.
Yeah, and that's why Silver Falls is now closed.
And that's the thing. But also, really? You know,
That was one of the fallouts from that.
Yeah, if you haven't read the piece, it was Jamie, was he the one who wrote? Am I remembering his name
right? I read it. I had missed the Silver Falls piece.
It was in that
I thought
post.
It was Donnie himself who wrote
it. Oh, it was
that.
Donnie. Yeah, sorry, not Jamie.
Yeah, yeah.
There may be a Jamie involved, but it was Donnie who wrote that. Yeah. The thing is that is there ever a time when you could take a dump on someone's yard? I mean, that doesn't... I mean, yes, I can see it being an emergency,
right?
It's the Outback, man.
Yeah.
Well, and that's...
wasn't the Outback.
That would not surprise me.
If you can't see me because I'm on a microphone, I'm shaking my head right now.
Oh, no, yeah. You know, I think the good thing that came out of this that I have seen, at least, you know, through people who listen to my show after I did my sort of epic rant on the whole thing, was the universal "this is bullshit" kind of thing that came out. And that was the one good thing. The bad thing is this is something that's going to take a few years to overcome. I mean, the people in Silver Lake are never going to forget this. They're going to be like,
that pastor, he's never going to like invite another bicyclist into his home. He's probably not even going to like be wanting anything to do with anyone on a bike anymore.
I think there's a good opportunity, and I know we don't want to get possibly too much into this, but for outreach in terms of the bicycling community to, I mean, not save face per se, but say, look, we're not all like this and would like to, you know, we weren't necessarily the ones perpetuating this, but we are part of that community and therefore we want to try to make it right.
How do we make amends?
Yeah, exactly.
That's something that I'm hoping to do. Not in Oregon, but everywhere, is what can I do to sort of pay it forward as a bike tourist or a bike packer?
Really,
what can we do to affirmatively make up for stuff like this? Because this isn't the only time this has ever happened. Mm-hmm. It's just a really public timing of it happening. And it's a question that I've asked a lot sort of other people. What do we do as good bike tourist citizens to – thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, beer mongers for our beverage.
Shit, I never mentioned that yet.
Let's take this short break and thank the beer mongers.
The beer mongers. Today we are drinking Burnside Brewery. Go ahead.
We've got our wonderful Breakside from...
Breakside. I said Burnside.
No, so a year and a half ago when I was first on this show, I mispronounced it as well. And so I wanted to get it tonight so I could correct myself. We've got Breakside Brewing from Portland, Oregon, up in North Portland. They're making a fantastic India Pale Ale called the Feel Good Flagship.
Okay, and right here, I mean, earlier I was drinking Shanghai IPA, which is how I felt when I was in San Francisco. kidding. Anyway, it's called Shanghai IPA by Old Town Brewery.
Yep.
Brewed in Portland, Oregon.
Yep.
Yeah.
I cannot hear the word.
Just up the street from where you got three shots.
Just around the corner from Cycle Portland.
I can't hear the word Shanghai without thinking of the Kick-Ass Oregon History podcast and their Shanghai episodes. Yeah.
Well, yeah, from Old Town Brewery.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
any port town, you'd get Shanghai.
Oh, absolutely. The history of Shanghaiing in Portland was amazing. If you're not a listener of that show, you should check that out.
It's kind of racist, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
I never understood why we used that word. Other than the fact, that there's like a racist connotation to it, mm-hmm. but like there are many words in the English lexicon we could have used.
Could have used another city, perhaps. How about San Francisco'd? We're going to start here. It's now called San Francisco'd. I also have a Wanderlust. The Breakside Brewery. Now, mine says that it's from Milwaukee, Oregon, which is just across the border there. But it is the Wanderlust India Pale Ale, and this is excellent. I endorse.
Yeah,
I officially endorse this one.
Right from the beer mongers.
Yeah, thank you,
right
beer mongers.
Speaking of which, we're gonna like take the long way around back to the rant here, but I was there yesterday for the women's finals.
Oh yeah,
the World Cup finals. It was freaking packed.
Yeah,
it was so great.
Of course,
Yeah, well, I'm sure there was that. Yeah, and like the walls were just lined with people, like mm-hmm. all the seats taken. I don't know.
That was a fun game to watch, wasn't it?
It was and it wasn't.
The first four goals worth, yeah.
Yeah, first 15 minutes, yeah. Bam, 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 bam. But because of that, it also like partially made the game a little less interesting for me.
Interesting.
But I don't know. I will definitely – I will watch women's soccer like – much more than men's soccer. Like World Cup men's soccer is cool. I'll watch that. I'll watch a Timbers game like if it's around or if it's on. But when it comes to like buying tickets, I would buy Thorns season tickets long before buying a Timbers ticket.
Abby Wambach is from my hometown.
That's
and
right.
She is royalty in Rochester, New York, and her wife plays for the Thorns.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, yeah. And they have a place here in town. So, yeah.
And was it three of the ladies on the U.S. team were from Portland?
Almost.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Almost every single women's professional team has a member on the U.S. national team, but that's sort of by design as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it was really fun to watch. And it was great. I was all USA, USA for a few hours there. It was great.
It's kind of nice to be proud of your country.
It really, you know, last couple of weeks, I feel like it's been a good patriotic time. You know, it's been all good. You know, not to get all political and everything, but it was all good.
I would not buy a ticket to, you know, a football game.
Football.
But I would buy a beer mongers and watch the game
and
there.
And watch the game there.
Inadvertently watch the game there. Oh, who's on?
Well, I went there specifically to watch the game.
Oh, congratulations.
Because I'm not going there to buy a beer, unfortunately.
We need to complete the beer mongers quadrilogy. I think since we have three beers, we also have...
Yeah, I've got a squirt.
But specifically Mexican squirt.
Mexican squirt.
Oh, yeah. Proper sugar in there.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
What does it say on the top of the logo?
Quitacid.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Maybe it's Spanish for squirt.
If you know what Quitacid means, please email.
At least it's their name, like, or what they're calling squirt, maybe.
Yeah. And it's a cool bottle. It's got like a twisty.
It's like ergonomic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
I can take this bottle for a drive.
It was funny because when I went to the beer mongers before the show, thinking that I'd be able to catch you guys before because I was running a little late.
Yeah.
And so I get in there and I almost bought actually a squirt, and then I was like, oh wait, they have a grapefruit. What was it? A grapefruit
cider.
Cider,
which I'd never heard of before. It was really delicious, interesting. And then I asked the guy, I was like, oh, has anybody from the Sprocket Podcast, Aaron, been in here? And he goes, is that the short guy or the tall guy?
Well, he is not the tall guy.
It's not the tall guy. All due respect. You know.
That's all right. So back to
my rant.
Your rant here. And
where was like, I? One of the
good
we need to make amends.
Pay it forward.
Thank you.
On the road etiquette.
Yeah, I feel like that it's something that's incumbent on those of us who feel like we're good citizens and we want to do good things. Is what can we do? And one of the thoughts that I had is if we ever do see bad behavior, because this is the thing that cheeses me off the most. Mm. I sound like I'm 83 years old saying cheeses me off. But anyways,
I like it.
Yeah, I'm bringing it back.
I have never heard of that before.
Yeah, well, you know, if you lived in Portland,
you are also like the youngest one here. Yeah.
Am I really? Oh. What about him?
Oh, kind of by far, I'm sure.
Wait, how old are you?
25.
Oh, I'm older than this.
No, really?
Rather, yeah, I'm 28.
Oh, you wear it well.
Yeah. I won the Sutterfuge game for today.
I'm 28 too. Awesome.
Born in 1928.
Yeah, I was born in 1928. Exactly, right?
Damn.
I feel like it sometimes. Bam!
Wear it well.
It got cold in here for a second.
All of a sudden it's comfortably chilly in here. There were a lot of good people. We know some of them. You personally know some of them who were on this tour, this Oregon Outback tour, to bring it back to that. And I'm wondering, did good people who
sit by and do nothing?
Did they do nothing? And that's my question. And I think that's the question that I pose for everyone else out there. If you see bad behavior on a bike tour, what do you do?
That's a tough question.
I'll respect to Donnie who wrote the article in the rant, and like I think he's right for saying like I'm not going to lead this anymore. This is done for me. Like he started it out with saying, you know, I could tell by the look of things it was going to be a shit show. And I don't know. To me, that sort of has this unspoken thing added on to that like, okay, I could tell something bad was going to happen. As the ride leader, I'm going to pose this as a question as opposed to like just putting it on him, because again, all respect to Donnie, one, for just organizing all
and
of
we're
this.
Missing and, information too
and,
so,
and yeah. I don't have the whole story. But as the ride leader, is it not incumbent upon us as ride leaders to kind of educate those on the ride to say, like, you know, for example, if I'm doing a pedal palooza ride, like, hey, there's only 12 of us, we're not going to cork every intersection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, hey, there's 50 of us, would, you know, two or three of you volunteer to cork?
Yep.
And here's how to cork. Or, you know, this is a ride in which we're not going to talk. This is the parameters of said ride. I don't know. It's just the question I'm going to pose.
I think that with that, in my opinion, or like what I could tell from the Outback for this year, was that in the years past, it was sort of this slightly more underground thing. Like, yeah, people knew about it.
Right.
But I think that the hype train just like kicked into full gear for this year. And so
there was like this avalanche.
Bikepacking generally has really
blown
off.
Up.
Yeah.
It's just skyrocketed out. And so I think that a lot of people who are getting into this, who have the mentality of like they hear from a friend, or they read the article and they're like, sweet, I'm going to bring, you know, a mentality that's other than what this ride has been or has represented for a number of years to that ride. It's very difficult to feel as a ride leader like that ride has become more than just something that you've curated. It's like it's taken on its own identity. And that can be really difficult to combat, especially with the number of people that were on it. So I mean, like, I think that's a fantastic question. I also could definitely see where if I were, you know, in that situation, perhaps I would certainly encourage people to, but I might not feel like I have the authority to like be like, this is what the Outback is, as opposed to like what it's not, or something like that.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, with like 200 people, it's, you know, it's one thing for me to pose this question and give examples of like a dozen and 50, but with 200 people, certainly you can't like, you can't account for everyone's actions.
Yeah.
And also I think that
you should try.
Yeah. You should, well, yeah. And, but there's also, let me flip it around. There is some personal responsibility and there's basic standards of conduct when you're camping. And to me, and that this was the source of my entire rant, if you're not doing Leave No Trace camping, you're doing it wrong. And I never say that in any mode of bike touring. Like, I'm a big fan of, you know, there's a lot of people, if you use technology, you're doing it wrong and blah, blah, blah. I think that's all horseshit. But like, if you're going to be camping, there are minimum standards of conduct,
oh,
and they
sure.
were blown away in this yeah. instance, and it ruined it for a lot of people, and it's kind of a shame. So that was the source of my rants, mm-hmm. and you know, I you know, as far as what the organizers go, I don't put it on them. I put it on the people who took a dump in that pastor's front yard. That's just
oh,
ridiculous.
Well, definitely. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to say like, Donnie, you should have.
I don't think that's
fingers.
What you were saying. I was just okay. refocusing my anger like a laser beam. I pulled out my flaming sword of justice and you know went after them. Right.
So just to extrapolate it to a slightly larger scale, during your trip down the coast, did you notice any scenarios or instances at public campsites where you
besides
saw
the raccoons?
Yeah. Yes. So just as yeah. a contextual reference, one of the things that really blew me away when I biked down the coast was the number of people free camping inside of paid camping sites. Mm-hmm. And so pretty routinely, my biggest pet peeve and what quite cheesed me was I would roll in at night. It might be 10 or 11 at night, biking in November. And I would find that darn pay booth and I would pay my $10 because I'm like, sweet, here's a safe spot. I'm probably not going to get bothered at night. I have a flat, dry place to pitch mm-hmm. my tent.
Yeah.
And then I'd wake up in the morning to a ranger knocking on my tent saying, hey, you need to pay. And I'm like, I'm the one that did pay. It's the other three people who rolled up last night said, you know, fuck the man. And yeah. What I was talking about with one of the rangers in Northern California, he said, yeah, we're actually thinking of shutting our bike and hike down yeah. next year because there were so many people that for that style of touring, what that represented to them was such a finger to authority that they would take advantage of resources and not want to
That's so
pay
weird.
For them.
I cannot do that. Yeah,
I
think that is so annoying.
Yeah.
And what bothers me is, let me give you an example of because in Samuel P. Taylor State Park
yeah.
last year, you know, and this is a place where I think they're getting a lot of the pressure of people yep. who are trying to free camp.
For sure.
When you come in from the north, which is the most usual route, because most people bike north to south. If you're new to bike touring or new to this region of bike touring, the prevailing winds tend to come from the north, so you want oh, yeah. them as tailwinds, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So last year when I was riding, I rode in. The pay booths are actually on the other side mm-hmm. of the park. So if you're going to camp, you've got to go past all of the campground and go pay to do that. Most people, me included, will pitch tent, get ready, just get your stuff, yeah. and then go pay.
Yep.
So I did that. I had just pitched my tent, and I had sat down for a half of I was just meeting the people who were there. I hadn't been there for more than a half hour, 40 minutes tops, mm-hmm. and had all the intention in the world to pay because I, like you, don't think that you should just try to get away with something that's wrong. Resources are being spent to do this. This is part of the fee for that. And by the way, it's $5 to $10 tops for yep. a lot of these places. If you're mm-hmm. not – if you're I got to pull out my rant music again. I feel like I'm about to go home, and you just got me going. I mean, because seriously, if you
I don't have the luxury of Brock's soundboard.
Yo, we don't have
the action drums.
I have this kind of great 8-bit style, like sort of adventure yeah. style music for mine. Anyways, if you're not willing to support that, it's just sort of like go wild camp.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's so many opportunities.
And by the way, leave no trace.
Or leave no trace, or you're going to get another rant from me. You know.
You know what? This don't. Be an asshole when you're touring or camping or just
in
general.
The general
yeah.
rule.
Yeah.
Don't
just
be an
asshole.
Asshole.
Yeah. So what should we do as people that are not necessarily assholes to try to cut down on that? Because I'm like, I'm sharing dinner with these people.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah
you gave me some of your
I
pasta.
I think it comes back to like one of the questions you're bringing up is, obviously no one watched somebody take a dump, but like, did you kind of see mm-hmm. chaos happening and just
did you turn away?
And go like, I hope it doesn't spill over into me.
And it's hard because if you don't know the person, mm-hmm. you know, it's tough. Let me give a story.
Yeah, it's tough going out on that limb.
I was at a Garth Brooks concert. My girlfriend's from Oklahoma. Okay. So this is how it goes.
Fair enough. It's a no judgment room.
It was a good show. It was a good show. I'm going to say, I'm not a country music guy, but, and we were in Buffalo, which is not far from where I grew up. And we traveled there, visited my family, went to the show. There's a guy in front of us who's just like being a real jerk, being drunk, and he's making, you know, gestures towards the woman that's in front with his hips. Mm. Basically, it was not cool.
Yeah.
I said, dude, that's not cool. You know, I stepped in and did something. Now, was that a dick move for me? Well, his girlfriend thought so. But you know, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna step in and say something like that. I don't know this guy. Now, would I have been the same if somebody had dropped trow? I don't know, maybe, but like for me personally, if something is sort of like just objectively not cool,
right?
I have in the past done it. Now, I almost got my teeth knocked in because of it, because he was drunk and he was a real big guy.
But then I just talked to him.
I said, hey, you know, dude, hey, my name is Tim. I just want, you know, the only reason I said that is because, you know, if that was like your sister or your, you know, something like that, that wouldn't have been cool. And he, it just deflated, you know, he was like, oh man, you know, he felt like a real jerk at the time. So, now that was one thing. Would I have gone up to the guy who was in the middle of doing that, or would I have forced him to clean it up? I don't know. But that's the question I pose. You know, I'm not some superhero with the flaming sword of justice here, but I have from time to time done stuff like this when stuff doesn't seem cool to me. Does that make me a hero? Probably is going to get my ass kicked one of these days.
But that's really interesting that you touched on that, because, you know, for the people that want to enjoy these experiences, I feel like there's often that label applied as like, oh, you're that social justice warrior. And that's just used by the people who want to continue whatever norm that was going. Like, boom, you're instantly, you know,
you can
whatever
be relegated to that box. Yeah, you just get, you're that label.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, we were just having fun. You were harassing a woman in front of me and I wasn't going to stand for that.
Or you're crapping in somebody's yard.
Exactly,
So I just thought it was interesting because I tend to like go basically 2 to 3 directions depending on the circumstance. I have a Twitter account because I recently got a technological capable phone that can take photos and post to the internet at the same time.
No way.
I know. I feel like I'm living in 2015.
It's the future.
What a time to be alive.
Interesting.
I've got this hashtag out there called North Williams Death Trap, and so every time I see something that just really cheeses me about North
hashtag
Williams.
Hashtag cheeses me off.
Yep.
That's trending on Twitter.
I'll take a photo of it. Sometimes I'll tweet Jonathan at Bike Portland. A lot of times I'll tweet Peabot and be like, hey, check it out, people. It's, you know, a year later, we're still parking in the bike
lane. They've welcomed those tweets.
Oh, I know. And it's been fantastic.
I know in the past other people have done the same thing, and their response is generally like, we want to hear from you guys. Yeah.
And that's a powerful thing because you're magnifying your voice by using social media.
For sure.
So that's another tactic that can be used.
I've done that, and then on the more like if you're out at the Outback or if you're not like quite there, there's always there's the appeal to authority, whether or not you think they'll be able to do something about it or not, or there's sort of the more Portland style approach in some respect of passively aggressively. Like I think if I was out there, that probably would have pissed me off so much I would have grabbed a bag, picked it up, and then been like, "What the f is this?" You know,
right?
And then threw it at the guy.
Yeah.
Who took it
oh, exactly. Been like, "Here, this is yours." Like I've been that person.
You forgot something.
And I mean, like, I don't think it should feel shameful to say it, but it really does get me. I mean, just the destruction of what I would consider to be the commons at the sacrifice of people's greater enjoyment.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's somebody who was doing it, because you'd used the word ignorant before, Aaron.
Yeah.
And I think that if somebody was ignorant, and sometimes, you know, that can be a person who could be receptive to, hey, look, this is not right, and let me explain why. Yeah. Now, there are going to be a lot of people who are just sort of like, well, you know, it'll just degrade because it's poop, or, you know, I was just having fun at a Garth Brooks concert. You know, people who are just like, you're the killjoy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? I mean, you're taking more of a risk in that scenario, but, like, I think that it's incumbent upon those of us to act when it's appropriate. And sometimes, you know, there is a no act, you know, it's appropriate not to act in some ways
as well.
Or to
act later or after the fact.
Your Twitter feed or your Twitter account, I think, is an excellent example of another opportunity, depending on the circumstance.
Sure.
So,
Or when somebody's parked in the bike lane, there's a wonderful public safety line where you say, by the way, somebody's parked in the bike lane. And they're like, great, we'll send a cop car to tow it. So that works pretty well, too.
There goes my hero.
I have two things about this. Two things. One, to the dude who pooped, you know, make amends, bring the pens. Second,
that. Were you working on this rhyme this whole time?
I've had that in my pocket. Like, opportunity.
I believe we have a title for the show.
Okay. Second is, you know, I think that a great way to actually, you know, in quotes, make amends is for all those cyclists who aren't assholes and who are also really great people is make your presence be known and, you know, stand up for those people who we are trying to be friends with. Basically, the community that we live in, our neighbors, the places that we stay, you know, leave no trace and all this stuff because we're all on this road together, right?
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, too, is that I think that a great example of this is actually these I've been on rides with bicycle clubs here in Portland, and all of them really are stringently, you know, doing the leave no trace thing. And it's amazing, actually, because I'm not the only one picking up, you know, trash around a pool naked. I'm with this bike club that's like doing this stuff too, you know? Yeah. And it's amazing. They organize a bunch of these rides, and they're setting a great example for everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I've also found myself and seen other people do this too. It's like, oh, are you finished with that drink? Let me grab that trash for you. Let me take care of it for you.
Yeah.
You know, not that we're trying to enable these people, but it's like,
yeah, but you're creating that culture of care, that culture of concern.
Lead by example.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lead by example.
You want to really lead by example, but also like instill that, you know, we're, you know, this is a community, not individualistic kind of thing. I mean, of course we're all individuals, but
yeah, I think it's something we're as a whole beginning to kind of wake up from, you know. I'm going to get a little esoteric for a second.
Oh, I thought you were going to play the drums.
Boom. No, I don't have them, unfortunately. But, you know, we had for a long time, like in Western thought, this idea of like we're all individuals and we're all happy as individuals. You have Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who, you know, talks about like his happiest times were living alone in the woods. And like while we have a social contract with each other, mm-hmm. we still also like are mostly responsible only for ourselves and solely for ourselves. And there's a number of philosophers that also like followed suit along mm-hmm. with that. And it's really influenced not just the higher philosophical thought, but like how we interact with each other and how kind of Western culture, you know, has developed and how American culture has developed. And so, you know, we've designed modes of transportation that keeps us isolated. We've designed housing that keeps us isolated. And we're finally realizing like, this is untenable. This is no longer working for us anymore. You know, that's why things like bikes are becoming more popular. That, and also we no longer are able to fuel the things to keep us isolated mm-hmm. as well. But I think it's all part of it. We're all like realizing like we can no longer exist in our own heads. We can no longer exist in this vacuum of like, if I've got my refrigerator of condiments, I'm happy. I have to like go out and meet people. I have to like pick up along the beach, you know, after a bike ride or whatever, because this is going to get taken away from me again.
Yep.
You know,
dude, group hug.
Seriously.
That was amazing. And you quoted Rousseau too.
Every amazing. Now and then I come up with some little nuggets here.
This is one thing I love about Brock, by the way, is that
interesting
is that when we're on a ride and he sees trash,
he'll pick
or something
it up.
Yeah, I'll pick it up. I love that guy.
Absolutely. Brock did us love fest right here, man.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
That's why I do the impression. The impression of one word.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's also this other one. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The thing, my favorite Brock story is I was, when he was living over in Hawthorne a couple of years ago, it was the first time I actually met him in person. Actually, I think the only time I met him in person. And it was the first time I was on the show, and I saw that he had in excess Welcome to Wherever You Are in vinyl, which is impossible to get. And that is like one of my all-time favorite albums. And he's a Dandy Warhols fan. Like, he and I are simpatico in music.
Definitely.
Which is sort of crazy because nobody likes the same music that I like. So I knew then that Brock was cool.
Yeah. All right. Should we close this thing out? All right. You know what? I'm going to take a back seat. You guys can do the outro.
Yeah.
All right.
Just decide who does the bold and who...
I'll take it. If I'm in the studio, we hit the mark.
Okay, got it.
We hit the mark when I'm in the studio.
And...
Read fast.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
And thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Owen for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K, Shadowfoot,
Katharina Malamgard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lane, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Hi, right here.
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Kahnmiller.
Running out of time.
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister, Morgan, Chris Gonzalez.
Faster.
Dan Gibbert. Zoe Kamenya, John Blood,
Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dave Knows,
Lars V, Chris Smith, Christy Kaser,
Caleb Jenkinson, JB Keeley, Peanut Butter, Jar Matt,
Patrick Arcane, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson,
Drew the Builder, Anna, and Chris Sasukas,
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson.
Close enough.
All right, everybody. Tim, thanks for coming.
Brush your teeth.
Go to bed.
Ride your...
Listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.